Well, to Singapore now. In 1965, fewer than 2 million people lived there, and the island state was known as little more than the site of a major World War II battle. Now, Singapore's population has more than doubled. It's still small, 5 million people, but that makes it all the more remarkable that it is the world's fourth biggest economic center, and that growth has been attributed to one man, Lee Kuan Yew. The 91-year-old died today at Singapore General Hospital. He was the first prime minister, the man who shaped the country 50 years ago, after independence from Britain. President Obama described him as a giant of history. In Singapore, state TV broke away from regular programming, and Lee's son, the current prime minister, struggled through an emotional tribute. The BBC's Jonathan Head is outside the presidential palace in Singapore. Jonathan, what's going on there?
Very large numbers have come down here. They're lining up as I speak, and it's well into the night now in Singapore, and the lines are still there of people who want to write messages of condolence on cards that have been laid out for them. It's a very orderly process of commemoration, as you would expect in this most orderly of Asian cities. This is an incredibly important moment, perhaps the most important one for the citizens of this island state since it became independent back in 1965. This man has really towered over Singapore throughout that time. Prime Minister for 31 years, even before formal independence, and then occupying senior positions since then.
Well, as you've been reporting, he created this highly educated workforce that could speak fluent English, reached out to foreign investors, tackled corruption, tried to clear slums. But he also was ruthless in many ways, and he said that. He said he interfered in the private lives of citizens. Tell us more about that, sort of the iron rule.
Yes, he always said you have to have some iron in you to rule Singapore. The experience of living under Japanese occupation during the Second World War, when he was very nearly executed at one point, seeing how harsh the Japanese were, but how effectively they maintained order. Then going to Britain for his education and seeing what he should aspire to, a proper legal system, a proper political system, made him very aware of the realities of Southeast Asia and what an uphill task it would be to turn these developing societies, and in Singapore's case, a multiracial society, into a viable and orderly state. And that drove him to assume the worst of people. He said people here could not afford the luxury of liberal individualism that you see in the West, that they had to be treated to severe and harsh leadership. I think by and large here, people accepted that. There were many who didn't, and of course, the voices of dissent have been very effectively silenced here. Mr. Lee very successfully used the Singapore courts to sue any papers who criticized him. He jailed a lot of his opponents. And by and large, when you see the extraordinary success he's made of Singapore, I think he felt his arguments were justified.
Low crime, little corruption, people relatively well off. But he, you know, when we talk about the iron rule, he banned chewing gum. And for a while, the government, as you report, was into matchmaking to create smarter babies.
Yes, I mean, it's the ultimate nanny state, really, Singapore. There are constant worries about whether Singaporeans are good enough at innovation, for example, thinking outside the box. There are extraordinary things about Singapore. It's not really a model because there's nothing else like this. It has no hinterland. It is just a city, albeit in a very viable position for trading. It's helped make it successful. And there's no one else like Lee Kuan Yew. In some ways, he's not that Asian. He's not like the other charismatic leaders we've seen in this region who were prone to flights of fancy, were very egotistical, often made terrible misjudgments. Lee Kuan Yew was a ruthless pragmatist. He had no religious beliefs. He was not interested in ideology. He started in the 1950s when he was campaigning for independence in alliance with communists, very quickly saw that that was a dead end, became fanatically anti-communist, but he would deal with anybody who could help his country survive. And that incredible, clear-sighted, ruthless pragmatism was admired by many people. He was a great intellectual ally of Henry Kissinger, for example. His advice on dealing with the powers in this region was sought by everybody.
Well, you report Singapore has recently become more socially liberal. Some of the political opposition made some gains. It's a very tiny political opposition, but made some gains in the last elections. And it has this huge economic engine. What do you see happening in the future, just briefly?
There's no question the machine that Lee Kuan Yew built, a super efficient, super honest government, very elite, very well paid civil servants, super educated, will continue. But I think psychologically, his death is going to have an impact. And remember, there's a lot more resentment now in Singapore about the incredible cost of living. This is now one of the most expensive cities on earth. And although the government provides a great deal in terms of infrastructure, many more moderately paid Singaporeans are feeling left out. They feel it's given itself over to the financial businesses that have helped it be so successful. So I think in time, we will start to see more dissent. And the kind of iron rule that Lee Kuan Yew was able to impose in the early days of development in the Cold War will no longer be sustainable here.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Head outside the presidential palace in Singapore, commenting on the death of the 91-year-old founder of that country, Lee Kuan Yew. Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you.